Monster Man, episode 472, Yoggoloth Kamigardian, and Zaratan. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are continuing our journey through Monstrous Manual, the 1993 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. And this is our next to last episode with monsters from this book. We are all the way to Zed, or Z for my American listeners. I have some bittersweet feelings about the ending of this season, and I'll talk about those more in our wrap-up episode, because I don't know that I'm going to have a huge amount to say about zombies, so next episode might be a kind of final thoughts episode. But that's for next time. Right now, it's time to thank some Patreon backers. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they have pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. So thank you very much to returning patron, Brian Orban. Your continued support means a lot to me. All right, let's dive in with these monsters, because for one of them, I have questions, and for another, I feel like I maybe have more answers. Let's start with the questions one, which is the Yoggoloth, Guardian. First question, what's going on with this comma? Because I get it, it is a Yoggoloth which guards things, it is thus a guardian Yoggoloth. Except that in the text, it is consistently referred to as a Yoggoloth guardian. So what's the comma doing there? If it's a Yoggoloth guardian and not a guardian Yoggoloth, why does it have a comma? Who knows? I like that it is called a Yoggoloth, guardian, as if we are to understand that this is a specific specialized type of Yoggoloth. But nowhere is it explained what a Yoggoloth is. I can only assume that because Yoggoloths are like part of the planar system, you know, part of the kind of, they fill an alignment role in between Batizu and Tanari, that maybe what a Yoggoloth might be is explained in the Dungeon Master's Guide? I don't know, I haven't read it, and I would be surprised if I did. So my understanding of the Loth thing is that the term Yoggoloth replaced the term Daemon with an A. Now, I know it's pronounced demon, but this is an audio medium, and I need some way to distinguish between demons with an A and demons without an A. So I'm going to call these guys daemons. Maybe they should be diamonds. I don't know, whatever. In this edition, they're not called that. They're called Yoggoloths, and demons are called Tanari, while devils are called Batizu. But there are parts of this entry's text where the creature is called a daemon. And that presumably means either that the term was in use or that the change was made relatively late, because this is not a case of the text being brought over from 1st edition and just not updated, because this specific type of daemon or Yoggoloth doesn't exist in 1st edition. In fact, the connection between daemons and loths is not super clear here. It's much clearer in later editions. For example, if you look at the various types of loths in 5th edition, there are a lot of them, and they include all of the ones that you might expect from Monster Manual 2, right? So the Arcanoloth is in there, and the Mezaloth, and probably the Piscaloth, and the Nyctaloth, and certainly the Enaloth is in there. Or, you know, where just replace Loth with Daemon to get the first edition name of things. But in second edition, this seems like a slightly different creature. It doesn't correspond exactly to any of the ones from first edition, as far as I can see, other than being called a daemon in the text and being neutral, or neutral evil. In keeping with that neutrality, it is basically just a soldier. It's a sentry tasked with protecting the treasure of evil wizards. And they have that animal-like quality that appears in some daemons, right? So they're kind of based on an animal model. They're bears, but with bat wings and ram horns. They're actually pretty adorable, and the illustration is pretty cute. So as monsters, they're fine, right? They're just a little color on an evil wizard's muscle. They're a big, tough monster that stands guard on treasure and that you're going to have to fight if you want all of these gold pieces. The thing that's weird about them is simply how they fit into the transition between daemons and Yoggoloths. I presume, because D&D leaves no barrel unscraped, that the Demidans did make a later appearance somewhere, but it's not in this book. Maybe they thought that three types of supernatural evil beings from hell-like planes was, you know, maybe too much. Did I say the Anthraxis thing? So it has been bothering me ever since I listened to an episode of the medical history podcast Sawbones about anthrax that I didn't mention, or maybe at the time didn't know, in the episode in which I talked about daemons, that Anthraxis the Enodaemon, the sort of weird rotting sheep head guy, has a weird rotting sheep head because he is Anthraxis, and the primary vector of transmission of anthrax in, like, one of its most famous outbreaks in the U.S. was improperly stored sheep fleeces. So there you go. Maybe I did say that. I don't know. But it just occurred to me now that maybe I didn't. These are the kinds of things that occur to you when you are a professional monster podcaster. Okay, next up we have the Zaratan. These creatures from the Al-Qadim setting are giant turtles whose shells are basically small islands. They spend most of their lives asleep and just kind of drifting in the water or floating there. And people come along and they mistake the shell for island and they pull up in their dhows and they have a break and light a fire. And then maybe that wakes up the Zaratan with hilarious consequences. If awakened, they can be very dangerous. They do a lot of damage with their bite, and even if you're lucky enough to survive, then you're going to wind up getting swallowed as the Zaratan's massive mouth just takes in a whole bunch of the water that you are presumably floating in if you're being swallowed by a giant sea turtle. And you can survive for a little while in the beast's tum-tum. So this is very much a throwback to a monster type that was very common in the first edition Dungeon Master's Guide, which is the temperate saltwater people swallower. There were lots and lots of them back then, and it's nice to see one every now and again. I feel like this colossal creature has more of a plausible survive-in-its-stomach-type scenario than some of the ones we've seen. The Zaratan is derived from a whole genre of island monsters in medieval and ancient literature. One common term is Aspidochilone. I don't know if that is the correct pronunciation, but basically it means asp turtle, or maybe shield turtle, right? There are traditions of these in ancient writing, in medieval bestiaries, but specifically, the Zaratan comes, as you might expect, for a monster from the Al-Qadim setting, from the Islamic wonder tale tradition. So there are these books that tell the stories of wonderful creatures and animals. I think its first appearance is, or at least maybe its first appearance under the name Zaratan, is in the work of the 8th to 9th century writer Al-Jahiz. Its most famous appearance, well, maybe not its most famous appearance, its most famous appearance to people like me is in Zakaria al-Qazwini's The Wonders of Creation, which is kind of one of the most famous medieval Islamic wonder tale collections. It's full of, like, oh, here are all the strange animals that live in other lands. There are some great illustrated versions of it that are actually digitized and available online, and I've used illustrations of al-Qazwini's text in a number of projects. But where this one specifically comes from, I imagine, is that it does appear in The 1001 Nights. Specifically, it's encountered by Sinbad the Sailor on his first voyage. So if you're running an Al-Qadim game, you are trying to create a 1001 Nights kind of vibe. And if you are running an Al-Qadim game at sea, people expect that Sinbad the Sailor stuff. They didn't sign up to play pseudo-Arabian fantasy without wanting to get into some Sinbad stuff. So, great. This is a 1001 Nights game. This is a monster from the 1001 Nights. Here it is. Terrific. The Zaratan's pretty cool. It's kind of limited in terms of what you can do with it, but people expect it. And this is a good not in Kansas anymore monster. The story, the idea of the, you know, giant whale or crab or turtle or whatever. Did I say that Zaratan actually means crab? Anyway, the giant creature that people mistake for an island is such a feature of this type of literature that you are signaling where you are in the literary world just by including it in your game. All right. So that's about all the monsters that we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to be doing... Hang on, I actually have to look this up. In our next episode, we are going to be taking a listener-requested look at the monsters of Jack Vance's Dying Earth books, one of my favorite fantasy settings. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I hope that you will join me then, right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@Dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution license. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.